Hey, this is T. Blankenship. Have you seen the new video of Wheaton Labs? It is permaculture awesomeness with all new and improved things like more rocket mass heaters, easy bake coffin, Willy Wonka, rocket cooktop 2.0, and the truly passive greenhouse. To see more, go to permies.com/tour. Again, that is permies.com/tour.
I guess we're going. I can see it says that the screen changed. So, hi, Molly. I'm Paul.
Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm very large. How are you?
Good, good.
Okay. So, today we're going to look at your property and make fun of it and, you know,
sounds
possibly
good.
Make you cry,
yeah.
Things like
throw
that.
Throw me in there, too.
Okay. And so, whereabouts in the world are you?
I'm in the U.S. I'm in Massachusetts, Cape Cod.
Oh,
so we're surrounded by water, which kind of keeps us nice and warm in the fall and keeps us a little colder in the spring.
Okay. I know that I pulled up over here on my other windowy, my other screen thing, your photos in a thread on Permies, and it's in the Cascadia forum. And so I thought, she's like Portland, Seattle, something like that. And,
I didn't find a place to throw it up. I clearly don't post often yet.
Okay. All right. So, Tina is helping us today. And so hopefully Tina will move this thread to whichever forum is more appropriate. Okay. You're surrounded by water is what you just said. So I'm trying to look at pictures where it'll show how surrounded you are.
Yeah, no, just the town, like the 15 towns where I live, we're all on a big peninsula.
Okay,
so
all right.
So we're the ocean. My lot's more surrounded by, on two sides, by conservation, which is a lot of like underbrush and then tall oaks and pine trees, red pines.
Okay. All right. All right. I can see an image that's from above.
Yep.
And it's got like little yellow lines all over it.
Little property lines kind of showing my neighborhood there. I've got, and you can see the neighbor next to me has a big pool. There's a neighbor with pretty much a orchard across the circle. And then to the other two sides of me are conservation, so no building.
Okay, which one is you?
I'm the upside down L-shaped one in the middle.
Okay, all right, there it is.
Unpaved driveway.
Got it. I'm staring at that right now.
Yep, right. I think I actually have one that's cropped, but it didn't. You have to download it from the.
Oh, okay. Well, I clicked on the image at the thing, and it showed me a much larger version, a much higher res version.
Okay.
Okay, so it looks like maybe you even have like a little pond out back already.
There is. That's a photo of my son just dipping into it. There's a pond on the east side, and it's just the former owners had a koi pond in there.
Okay. All right. Oh, okay. There, I found the picture of the boy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, that looks like something that's probably rubber lined.
Yeah. The bottom half is rubber lined and the top, I think, is like a plastic. It's
okay.
Above the waterfall. Yeah.
All right. And so, let's see. All right. So let's get a couple of basics covered. Do you know what your annual precip is?
I wrote it in there. I feel like it was like 40 something inches.
Wow.
I feel like we get a lot. We don't get our summers are becoming a little bit more Mediterranean. So we don't get as much rain in the summer, but we get a lot of precipitation, especially in the spring and fall. Yeah, 40
okay.
inches.
43 inches. Wow. That is like, and like, what's the coldest temperature you hit like what is the coldest temperature you hit this winter?
This winter, we're going to have milder winters and hotter, drier summers. I think we probably hit maybe like 15, but we had a February short freeze down to like 4. Last February, and a lot of people lost some bushes.
Okay. All right. So definitely frost.
Mm-hmm.
Not getting below zero, but,
really.
You know, yeah. Okay.
And
so,
it's a new property for me. I haven't been here, you know, for a year yet. And I know they say to wait and watch everything, but I'm impatient.
Okay. I want to address that first.
Yeah.
They say,
yeah.
And I want to take a great big stick and give them a whack and a handshake at the same time. And so, it goes like this. You should do nothing for the first year. Just mm-hmm. observe. That's what they say.
And I know I'm not going to do that.
Right. So there's two sides of it. What they say is very true and very wrong at the same time. And part of it is, yeah, you're not going to do that. And another part of it is that's really dumb to do that. Don't do that, and simultaneously totally do that. And I know I'm saying this thing, the opposites, but it's like, you know, there's a lot of value in observing for the first year.
Yeah.
But there's also even more value in getting started and doing things the first year. So, sure, it's true. It's true and it's false.
Well, and this conversation is a part of that, trying to plan out what I do so I'm not setting myself back.
Okay.
As I do my new things about the property.
All right. So now I see the L-shaped thing on the screen, but now it's tilted from the other image I was looking at in a moment.
Yep.
So in this picture, which way is north?
North is up towards the top right, so by the circle.
Okay.
That you enter the driveway from is north. Just tilt my head.
Okay. So, the original image I was looking at was probably the best one.
Correct. Yeah, that was the right north-south range.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Alright. So, lots of trees. It's kind of a mix between conifers and deciduous. And did
right.
you say
this
that
is the, winter, this is a winter picture, so you really can only see the conifers well.
Which is delightful.
Yeah.
The deciduous trees, did you say oak? Is that what you said earlier?
Yeah, they're mostly oak.
Okay. All right.
There's some beech trees too, shorter, you know, like an understory of that.
All right. It's possible that your oak trees produce acorns.
And, oh, they do.
Oh, yeah. And so my understanding, I've not had a lot of oak trees in my history, but my understanding is that they kind of produce a few every year, and then once every 7 years is a mast year, and now they're 4 inches deep all over the place. And that's when you're thinking like, why don't I have pigs? And I've heard that there are people that will eat them. Have you done anything about eating?
I have heard, you know, that people make them into flour too. Both my children have nut allergies, so they just collect them and throw them at each other if we haven't tried to eat them yet.
I see. Okay. All right. There are varieties that are very low in tannins, and of course some of the most expensive pork in the world is pork that was raised on mast. And so it's like, and I don't know if it, sometimes the stuff that's really expensive tastes terrible, so I don't know if it tastes good or not. I have not eaten that $1,000 a slice ham, so I really don't know. But Okay. All right. My guess is now you've got how many acres is this? This is a little more. This is an acre and a half.
Yep. Almost.
Okay. All right. I'm good at guessing this stuff. And you're thinking, I want to grow food.
Yeah. I left rather large vegetable gardens. So I'm going to try to recreate some of them, but I'm trying to do it in a way that uses less of my time, but grows more.
Okay. You have a lot of
go ahead.
You have a lot of trees, but if you're on a peninsula, I'm going to guess that like you see those trees, saving you from a lot of intense wind. Like you have wind, but not nearly as much if those trees are protecting you from the wind, but there's still a lot of wind. Am I close?
Yeah. I mean, the coastlines definitely get considerably, double the wind we get. Ours is not crazy. It's probably like 12 to 15 miles per hour. It comes from the north, in the winter and the south in the summer.
Okay. All right. So there is kind of a constant wind generally.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the 40 mile an hour, 50 mile an hour stuff going on a few miles away. It's a little bit gentler. And the trees, all these trees are really helping you out and cutting that down.
Yep. And they also produce quite a bit of leaves. I do have a lot of leaves to work with, which I like for composting.
Okay. All right. And are you familiar with my philosophies about composting?
Probably not carting it as far around the lot as I do.
Yeah, I'd like to go easy on the messing with it stuff. I mean, I love the idea of okay, here come all the leaves in the fall. Now, oak leaves. I wonder how many tannins are in the oak leaves. Maybe it's not a big deal. Maybe it's fine.
Yeah. It seems to be fine. I just, when I do it, I typically just add chopped up leaves in with my kitchen scraps.
Okay.
And it works
all right.
Well. Right here, I just have a big pile right now.
Okay. All right. Well, a big pile right now. I mean, there's a product that you can get called leaf mold. And, it's when you make a pile of leaves and then it gets rained on over and over again. Gets smashed down and then it starts to rot. And now you don't exactly have compost. You have leaf mold, which is actually not a bad product. It's pretty great for a lot of stuff, but
it's all over the woods around me. That's for sure.
Okay. An acre and a half. And, it's not you living there by yourself. I saw that kid in that one image. So more than just you.
Yeah. And, I've got two kids.
Okay. All right. And, an acre and a half is something where I'm going to say, let's say we took out all the conifer trees on your property. And in time, we may even put a dent in those oaks.
Yep.
Because we're not eating them a lot.
And,
it's okay, turns out that's not our food staple. And so, but the conifers are actually literally poisoning you. And it looks like you've got quite a few, facing south. Now, what is that space that's kind of to the southwest of you there?
So that's where they had, you can see kind of a road going up between, and then they had two big vegetable gardens on both sides. So that's kind of like a clear field right now. And in the back of it, it's got some trees and brush.
Okay, so this picture that I'm looking at might be a little old.
No, those trees are still there on the south side there. The ones around that topo line, the green line.
Okay, all right. I mean, basically what I'm looking at is I think that those trees are uphill of you. Is that correct?
I mean, there's not – in between lines there is only 2 feet, I think. So it's pretty flat.
It's pretty flat. All right. Good. Yeah. Good. And, but the thing is, there's a bunch of those conifer trees that are south of you, but, it looks like most of them that are south of you are kind of south of you where the house is. But, okay. The thing is that in the winter time, those trees are providing some shade.
Yep. And I have a photo from the winter showing the field with the trees in the back. And there are definitely, you know, three large pines that could come down that probably provide too much shade if I want to go big on the garden.
Okay. All right. So, here's part of what I'm thinking. Like on an acre and a half, you can grow enough food to feed 1.5 people very easily.
Okay.
Or you can feed 6 people, but it becomes a full-time job for 2 people.
Right.
And so it's like what we're shooting for is the easy one. And it's like maybe eventually it'll get to be something where it actually feeds – it produces enough food to feed 2 people. And so that's better than, you know, 1. And which means that when we're all done with this property in maybe 5 years' time, there won't be any oaks left, I don't think. I mean, depending on...
There'll be a whole lot less of this manicuredness.
Which you know... now is a really good time to talk about the manicuredness. So on the north side of the house, it looks like there's a lawn.
There is.
And when you go out there in the warmer season and you stand on this lawn, do you see weeds?
I really haven't been here and I came in at the end of September. There's not a ton of weeds. Those are all listing photos. And I did ask the former owners. I'm a renter, but I got to know the people who lived here before. They've come by a couple times. And he used spray. He didn't use like pre-emergent or anything. I did ask that because I wanted to know if I could use the grass or not.
Okay. So you're renting this property.
Yeah, but it's a long-term rent. I wasn't going to move the kids here without signing something long.
Okay. So when we talk about taking out some trees, you're like,
they're okay
not
with
a problem.
That.
Okay. Yeah, okay. All right. So, I'm trying to look at these pictures and, like when I see the pictures of the lawn, you know, I want to see like, oh boy, there's a weed problem because that's.
yeah, you're not going to find that in the listing photo of the lawn.
Right.
They worked all year to make it like that.
Okay. Yeah. So because then the next big question is.
And that's that's north facing too. So I'd focus first probably on the other side.
Okay. All right. Cool. I'm concerned about persistent herbicides.
Yep.
Now, clearly there are some places where they, you know, are letting everything grow wild. I mean, oak trees, would die with persistent herbicides. They would die for almost any herbicides. So, it's kind of like, all right, cool. Wherever you have too many of those trees, but of course, part of what you want to do is near the house. That's your zone one.
Yeah. So there's like a little southwest facing corner and that's what's behind my computer screen right now. That's where we spend the most time. That's where we come into the house. I do want to do more there. That's the east side of the garage and the house. The pond is on that side.
Okay. All right. So, all right. The constant 15-mile-an-hour wind, and I know it isn't constant, but it's like dominant. Like at my house, if we have a breeze, it's like a 3-mile-an-hour breeze, and it's like on a windy day, on a day that we might call windy, which is like less than 5% of the time, might be a lot like your regular day. And although we do get some gusts when the winds line up just right down our valley, but that's pretty unusual. But you have a kind of a constant wind, or, you know, almost constant wind. And so part of me is thinking like, okay, I want to mitigate that a bit. And, I want to try to get those winds to kind of go over my gardens. Okay. And so, you know, and for a project like this, my thought is do your earthworks first. Now, do you suppose that the property owners would get excited at all about, renting an excavator?
I think they would be fine with, I've talked to them about Hugo in the back here at least, and they were okay with that.
Okay. All right. I mean, it's kind of such a skinny property. I mean, one big thing I think of is like, okay, I want to put in some berms and, like 15 feet tall, but this property is kind of skinny. I can't get a wrap and bermitude. It's just not going to happen. So then it's kind of like, all right. I can't do berms, but you know, around the perimeter, maybe I could do some Hugel cultures that are a little bit on the bigger side.
Yeah, I'd love to start doing them in the back and kind of, you know, in the back of that photo there, especially on the back left, and work up.
Okay. All right. This property is pretty much just flat.
Yeah.
And so it's not like we are going to have a lot of ability to control cold airflow or something like that. It's kind of like it's all puddling here and stuck here. I imagine that it doesn't ever flood there.
I don't know. I wouldn't see it flooding here. I think there's enough stuff to absorb things.
Okay. Plus you're close
there's
enough.
No
to
area
the
that puddles. Yeah. There's no area that puddles here.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm kind of thinking that now, do you know, is the property to the southwest of you, is that public land or private land?
To the south, there's a little strip of public conservation, and to the west and the southwest is private conservation. So the larger parcel is private.
All right. And when they do private conservation, do you know if that's an individual or if it's, you know?
It's an individual that I think deeded it to a trust.
Okay. So, all right. I what I'm thinking of is I want more sun. And so, you know, perhaps they want to thin the trees a bit, you know. At least take out some of the conifers.
Yeah.
Because I want to get more sun onto your property, all year, but especially in the winter. All right. So, okay. So just a little thing that, you know, maybe talk to them about like, you know, trying to have less conifers and more of the oaks, or just, maybe even a meadow, you know. For animals or something, grazing animals. Yeah, like that. I don't know. So,
well, I did have a deer grazing out there this morning. I threw that photo up there too. So I'm going to need some fencing.
All right. So, let's see. I'm looking.
Yep, she ate my kale, the only thing that I threw out there in the fall and overwintered.
Yeah. Now, okay, so then this might be part of what we need to talk about as well, is like if you're going to grow a garden.
Yeah.
What do you want to
do? I don't know. It's got to be, I had a 5-foot hardware cloth garden or fence around my past garden in a, you know, only 8 miles away from here or whatnot. And it didn't, it ended up not, the deer pressure wasn't as high, but they could obviously jump right over it.
Right.
They didn't smash around. It kept the bunnies out.
It looks like there might be something fence-like to the eastern line.
There's like probably, I think maybe a 6-foot wood fence around where my neighbor has a pool over there.
Okay. All right. And so, because 6 feet, the deer over here I know will pop right over a 6-foot fence without a problem. But we generally need to do 8-foot. But there's also stuff that can be done, kind of like, I think a real good one is, Mike Hosel's, wavy deer fence. It seems to be very effective at keeping deer out. And it's quick and relatively cheap. But, otherwise we're just growing food for the deer, which is probably not what you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind feeding them some, but I don't think I can grow enough for my family and them. There's quite a few around here, thankfully.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So there, I've put you onto the wavy deer fence. It's quick and cheap. And so it might be a good solution here.
Can you explain a little bit more about it?
Okay. Tina, do you think you could find some pictures of it and bring those up? But, the wavy deer fence, he gets big rolls of this, ungalvanized wire mesh that's, used for putting in, when you're laying down cement.
Okay.
And then he'll set it on its edge and he'll put a steel fence post in the ground every, I don't know, I'm going to guess every 15 feet or so and you know, like a T post.
Yeah.
And then he waves the fence. The fence goes in a wave and it only works on really flat land, which is what you're sporting.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, and then there's a picture of it.
Okay.
And so, the idea is that, as it waves from left to right going down, then, he'll attach wires to the furthest out point on the wave, which helps to add a little bit of structural integrity. And at the same time, it makes it so that if he'll attach something shiny or something visible to it to make it a little bit more visible, then the deer approach it, and apparently this is I can go on and on and on about it, but it's like if you're gonna make a fence for deer, there's basically two approaches. Either you make an 8-foot tall fence, which is a physical barrier, or you will make 2 4-foot tall fences with a 4-foot gap between the two. And then the deer, it's more of a psychological barrier because, the deer look at it and they don't have good depth perception because their eyes are on the sides of their heads and they kind of like, I don't think I can get across that. And so, they don't, but it is proven to be powerfully effective. And so, but they gotta see that the other wires, the two wires that you run down the edges of the deer fence that are about 4 feet apart. And then that way they can kind of see like, I can't jump from here and clear the wire on the other side.
Okay.
That's too much for me. And so I'm going to not do it.
Okay, I'm interested in that. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, I'm kind of thinking like, okay, rather than building berms, let's say that you get yourself, like you, now, if you had an excavator for an entire week, can you take an entire week to do something, to do a week-long excavator project? Or do you have a worky job?
Yeah, I have a worky job.
Okay. All right. So this is going to be more like you'll rent it for a weekend or a day or something like that. All right. That's cool. Yes. That's cool. All right. So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking like, okay, based on that and other things, I'm thinking like, okay, for the first year, you got to get yourself, some kind of fence set up to keep the deer out.
Mm-hmm.
But that's probably going to come after you build your first hugel cultures. Now, I'm kind of thinking that for your first ones, I would want to build something that is, northwest of the house.
Hmm.
And so that's my first thought. I'm not married to it.
Yep.
But what I'm, part of me is kind of thinking like, okay, I got to find a big blob that I could put a fence around. And I want to start off doing a half an acre.
Yep.
Maybe a quarter of an acre. Maybe I'll fence off a half an acre and do a quarter acre of hugel cultures in there. And it looks like there are some trees volunteering right there. The other thing is that because it's northwest and it's getting up to the northeastern edge of your property, the northern part of your property, it's further away from those trees that are kind of annoying me. To the southeast. Is that right? No, the southwest. Southwest.
Yeah. Yeah, so the northwest area, it's all brush and trees right now. Bushes and trees.
Okay. All right.
After, between the grass and the road, it's just been left as is.
Okay. So, I kind of want you to go in there and take out the trees and the brush where your garden is going to be and set them aside because that's going to be the innards for your hugel cultures.
Okay.
All right.
You put the garden up on the northwest there rather than where the former owner had it on the flat areas and the field on the southwest or the south?
Is that what that is?
Yeah, I mean, I just have clear, they're vegetable gardens. It's just clear, flat land right now. Yeah, headed back there on either side. There's water out there, and that's where they had two large vegetable gardens.
Okay, all right. I can kind of see, so we go to the overview map. And, so let's see, hey, Tina, could you go and find that overview map, inside that thread, please? And then click on it. So that way we can see it in, you know, ultra zoomy mode. There we go. Like that. Now when we start talking about north, it makes sense to everybody. So if you click on that map, then it'll bring up a much larger map and then we can kind of zoom in on the property. Maybe you have to click on it again. Or I don't know how your browser wants to do it, but hey, it's happening. Look at that. So zoomy. Okay, so what you're saying is that south of the house, there are two gardens, and we can kind of see them.
Yeah.
There's kind of a garden on the left and a garden on the right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they they had an electrical fence for the deers there before, so that's not there.
Oh, they took the electrical fence with them?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So this could be good gardener's soil.
It looks like it is. I've sent it out to our extension, you know, for a full testing.
Okay. All right.
But it seems like it is.
All right. It looks black and dark and
full
of life.
Like the worm little things are starting to come up.
Okay. All right. Good. So, you are right. I didn't know that was a garden. I wasn't sure what that was. It looked like a parking lot because there was a car parked there or something, but.
Yeah, I think they had like a boat and a couple trucks there.
Okay. All right. So, I was kind of thinking like, you're right. I was thinking of this area that hasn't been touched. And, part of it is that I want to build hugelkultures and there's all these trees volunteering to be inside of my hugelkultures.
Okay.
And then you'll notice that there's two gardens, the left garden and the right garden. The left garden is a little close to a bunch of trees. And that kind of annoys me.
Yeah, that gets a little bit less sun, they said. Or it seems like it too when I'm out there.
Right. The right garden looks like it's probably going to get good sun, which is lovely and delightful.
Mm-hmm.
But the plan that I'm putting together for the Northwest is that, I'm going to be able to get a lot of wavy deer fence around that. And then B, have a lot of hugelkultur in the middle.
Okay.
And so, and then all of the woody bits that I need for my hugelkultur are all volunteering right there. And so, because I took out some trees and stuff, it's going to be all sunny all the time. And so, especially now I'm going to make a suggestion. And that is that, suppose you go and let's say you're going to make a goal of, and I'm going to be bold because I have very tall hugelkulturs at my house. Mine are about 10 or 11 feet tall.
Yeah.
And on top of that, where I put them in, it's solid rock. So I had to import the dirt in order to stack it up that high. But, you're probably going to use the dirt that's right there. And so in which case you might be digging down a couple of feet where your paths are going to be. And I'm kind of thinking like, maybe you can stack your, hugelkulturs super duper tall so that they end up being something on the order of 10 feet tall. And the reason why I'm suggesting this is that if your gardens end up being a little on the tall side, then they're reaching out to the sun a little bit more. So you're still getting shaded from the south in the wintertime, but not as much. So plus another really great perk is that if you make hugelkultur here that's 10 feet tall, I get the impression nobody cares. Nobody's going to be whiny and snotty about it.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you've got the space. You can go big.
Yeah.
You can live large. And so the bigger you do this, the more benefit you'll receive in the long term.
Okay.
So, I'm just kind of thinking that, you know, for you, and on top of that, when you build your hugelkulturs, you're going to make them have interesting curvy shapes and the curvy shapes are going to kind of interlock and, they're going to be next to each other. You're going to have like four kind of wavy lines all next to each other, making up your hugelkulturs in this general area. And that's going to make it so that when the wind comes from whatever direction it's coming from, it's not going to be able to get down very far.
Okay.
And that's going to make it so that your hugu cultures are going to hold more moisture and they're going to be a little bit warmer. So you're going to be able to grow more food. You have a longer growing season.
Okay.
So you can do better than most people can do because you've got a much bigger lot to work with.
Hi, this is Mark. There are a lot of reasons to get angry these days, but I prefer to focus on the positive things that we each can do to make this world a better place. The book Building a Better World in Your Backyard, Instead of Being Angry at Bad Guys, is a great resource for just that. Instead of throwing my arms up in frustration at governments or big corporations, there's a list of ideas that we each can tackle to affect change. Information about this book and other resources can be found at permies.com.
Now, for that area that's off to the south, I want you to keep the soil that they've built and all. Hey, Tina, you went back to the picture where north isn't north anymore. Could you get us back to the picture where north is north? North is up. So, that way when I say left or stuff, or even north, south, east, west, it's like it makes more sense. Yes, that's the one. So, I watch it. So they've built soil there, which is great. And one of the things that's going to be super duper important is when you build your brand new hugel culture beds that, I've talked about this before. Have you heard me talk about how I want you to put blotchiness on the inside?
Like,
I want you to.
Like different things.
I want different things, but I want the different things to not be homogenized. I want them to be blotchy.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. And so one of the things that's going to be the most important thing is I want you to go out to that garden with a 5-gallon bucket and then do your very best to get a giant shovel full from that. I want you to do a basketball ectomy. All right. I want you to pull a blob out of the garden that is about the size of a basketball and I want it to not get broken. I want you to treat it like a precious egg. And then you're going to carry that and you're going to ever so gently plant that egg inside of your new hugel culture. This is a blob of really good gardener soil. And so it's going to be a seed for your future hugel cultures.
Okay.
Now, I think that there's all kinds of terrific stuff to do back there, and we can talk about doing something there as well. It's just that, you know, getting the wood and stuff for that, it isn't as ready. I mean, and then on top of that, you've got all that shade and stuff. And then you still got to try and do the deer fence around that. The other thing is that that area makes a better zone 2, zone 3. Whereas the area that I'm proposing is a better zone 2. Zone 1 is going to be, I can kind of see like that must be a garage there. And then, because there's a car parked there. So
yeah.
From the car into the house is kind of going to be your zone 1. But
yeah, and
anything,
that's the most.
Anything right next to the driveway is zone 1-ier than that garden way down there, which for a lot of the year could get easily forgotten. Unless you're so passionate about gardening that you're going out there 7 times a day every day. Whereas, which is, you know, that'll make it more of a zone 1. But I think what we're going to see is that what I'm proposing is something that can be good. Now, if you are inside the house and you look towards the northwest, Are you looking at this possible place where we're talking about putting in this new giant garden?
I would be, and it kind of would block. I wouldn't be able to see anyone coming. because it's pretty, you know, I can see if there's trucks now coming through, but I can't.
Okay.
So I think like a 15 foot out there would.
Oh yeah.
I just have to sit and think with it for a while because in my mind everything was just out back where the gardens were, not where the trees are out front.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, hey, you know, you can ignore everything I say. I don't care. In a little while, this call will be over and I'll forget all about this. Whereas
and
you
I'll
have to live with
about
it
for a long time. Yeah.
So I'm just kind of thinking that like, okay, I guess another question is, what is on the northwest side of this house? So if you could look out that window and see a truck coming, which is what you just said, like.
Yeah.
Like, is that the living room? Is that?
Yeah, you know, it's the living room facing there. We don't use that side of the house much at all. We don't use that grass. We don't use that entrance.
But
I
you
can
do.
Yep.
You do sit in there, and you look out that window.
No, we'd sit facing back to that window. That's just like the forgotten side of the house.
Okay, here's a thing that I was gonna suggest, and in fact, I've got this. No, I see a little pencil here. I'm like, oh, can I draw? No, I don't think I can draw. All right. What I was about to suggest is I'm going to pretend that people look out the window, you know, and it kind of goes like this. If you make the Hugel cultures kind of squiggle in the general direction towards the window, then when you look out the window, you're looking at the ends of the Hugel culture.
Uh-huh.
And what you see is more of a jungle because you're looking down the Hugel cultures instead of having a Hugel culture run across, in which case you're just seeing the side of one Hugel culture. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to paint a picture of like, from there, be able to see more, to see more, Hugel culture, growies. But I also want something similar for when you drive down the driveway to be able to do the same thing, to see down the rows of growies. That kind of helps to move this from a zone 3 into a zone 2 or in a zone 1.5. Is to be able to see down the roads. Now, you said, but I was looking at the trucks. There's a truck coming and I want to know. I want to see it. Well, okay. You know, this is 2024. They got contraptions for that kind of thing.
True.
It'll even beep to let you know. Beepity beep, beep, beep. There's something to look at.
No, thank you.
Okay, well.
I could have a camera, that's true.
Yeah, and you probably even get an even better view.
True.
You know, like you can see it better than right now when you're trying to look through all the trees. So, all right. There, I've laid out a bunch of stuff. I don't know, so, I don't know exactly what you want, but there, since I've said enough stuff, I mean, how I would go about it and doing things.
The thing
down to the south, the old gardens, it's like, okay, I could see making something down there, but I'd probably go a little further, you know, away from the house down that line so I can grab those trees and get them out of there and work them into hoogles and stuff. But, you know, I just kind of feel like those gardens, I mean, the best fertilizer for the garden is the gardener's shadow. And so next to the driveway is going to get more attention always than far away from where you park or where you walk or from any of that kind of stuff. Now, and I kind of don't want to give up on that gardener's soil that's been built up, but there's things we could do. And of course the longer term plan would be that the whole property is covered in wavy deer fence and hugo culture, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll get there eventually.
There's quite a few downed trees already, you know, along the side there on the private conservation. I can use downed trees, right?
Yeah, they're the best.
Okay. And would you put conifers in there too for diversity, or like what percentage do you think you would do for that?
I would say that if I have, you know, infinite all sorts of trees, then yeah, I'm going to put the stuff that's best inside. And yes, I would have diversity. Some spots would have more of tree A and some spots have more of tree B. I would say that oak is going to be a much better ingredient for hugo culture than any kind of conifer. But, you know, I also think that, when it comes to, the conifers are going to be more like weeds than the oaks. The conifers are going to make it so that other things don't grow as well there. So I'd be wanting to take out all the conifers, but in time I'm going to take out all the oaks too, and I'm going to grow something else there that is more of a food producing plant or something that's going to contribute more to my permaculture efforts.
Okay. How thick of a soil? So if it's say it's a 10-foot hugel, how thick is that layer? That outer layer, and I know you're making more of it, I would think, by chop and drop as you go, but initially, I would say
initially a minimum of 5 inches thick.
Okay.
Minimum. And then because it's going to be lumpy bumpy on the inside, you're going to have some spots where it ends up being a foot and a half thick and stuff like that.
Okay. How about some best? I know we get a lot of precipitation here, and on my old house, I had kind of worked with someone to make like keyhole beds, and we were kind of redirecting a lot of the gutters, trying to figure out where from here I could do that. Because I need like a rain barrel would fill up with one of our storms very quickly and be overflowing.
The water that you have on this property, is it like city water or is it well water?
It is town water. It's not, I mean, it's treated, there's no fluoride, but it is.
Okay.
Definitely treated.
It is chlorinated in some way.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but the thing is you get so much precip already, but and then what are your roofs made out of? What's this orange stuff?
Oh, that's just showing where buildings are from the town. Okay. But they're asphalt shingle.
Yeah, so I don't really want to save that water. I mean, it's kind of like a toss-up, which is worse, the stuff from the city or the stuff off of your roof? I don't know. And let me take another angle. When you pay for water from the city, is it expensive? Like if you were going to water your lawn, would that be $100 a month?
Maybe. I mean, yeah, it could be about that.
Okay.
And it's not going to get cheaper.
True. But when you build the hugel culture, you're going to have to irrigate it a bit for the first couple of years.
Yeah.
And then beyond that,
hopefully
it
not.
It should take care of itself, and you don't need to irrigate it anymore. And it depends. I mean, you know, I've seen sepulcher projects where he didn't irrigate it at all the first year, and it did great. And so it depends on your precip. It depends on how rich the soil is when you put the soil on the wood, things of that nature. So there's lots of maybe sauce all over it. But I would much rather take water from the city and then put it in some sort of container for 24 hours or more. So that way all of the chlorine off gases, and then use that, then trying to use the stuff off your roof, because that's got a whole different story, and it's kind of like it's not as carefully controlled as the stuff coming from the city. And so it's like for you to clean that up could be quite the challenge. But, I mean, there's ways to make it less gross, but it's like I would – rather than talking about how to make it less gross and more plausibly usable for a garden, I would much rather talk about making more Hugel cultures, or, you know, making it so you don't need that water or want that water.
Okay.
Things of that nature.
That makes sense.
So there's so much stuff that's being done about – saving water from your roof, and I just kind of feel like if you've got a metal roof, then okay, let's start talking. But even then, you know, there's ways to improve the quality of that water. But wow, so many people talk about, and I just kind of feel like I would much rather get people to the point that they've got Hugel cultures that don't require irrigation.
All right.
All right. Now what I've shared a bunch of gobbledygook. What do you want?
I just need to sit for a little while and think about putting it out there, because I really was planning on putting everything out back there.
Okay.
Let's see. There's some things that I have a lot of. Oak leaves being one of them. Just trying to come up with solutions for that. I think I know your theories about newspaper and cardboard.
Don't use any of that.
Yeah.
Leaves are awesome, especially in the fall. And the only problem with leaves is that they can mat up and then basically make it so no water gets inside your hugels. That's the downside.
You gotta chop them.
Chopping them sounds like the wrong kind of work to me. I think what I would rather do is because another great thing is that I think that mulching in the spring or summer, you want to keep it fairly thin. And then around midsummer, you can start doing it quite a bit thicker. And into like mid to late September, do it really, really thick. So when those leaves are coming down, it's a great time to put it down. But the problem you're trying to mitigate is that you don't want it to make a mat that water can't get through.
So
I kind of wonder about the thing of like, can you mix a bunch of sticks in when you're doing it? So rather than making a mulch that's like, I don't know, 5 inches thick that's just leaves, what if you make something that's 12 inches thick that's like 30% sticks and twigs? And so it'll have a bunch of air gaps in there, and that'll keep it from matting.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, so I've also got a lot of kitchen scraps. I don't have chickens, and my worms only eat so much. Right now, I'm just kind of shoving it under my pile of leaves.
Okay.
And I haven't had pest issues, but I expect them.
You haven't had what issues?
I haven't had pests. Like my dog hasn't gotten into it, and I've had rats in my compost at my last place. So I kind of expect that'll happen.
All right. You know, when you have an abundance of rats, you have a deficiency in what? Rat terriers, I guess.
Coyotes here, so hopefully that helps.
Okay. All right. I'm not sure how the coyotes will do with your new fence. Let's deal with the problems when they arrive. I'm kind of thinking like, okay, for your kitchen scraps, I want to get rid of the worm bin. Okay. Once you got your hugel cultures, then yeah, I want you to go out there and, do Ruth Stout composting where you're going to go splort in a spot and then you're going to cover it up with a bunch of leaves.
Okay.
You know, like there you're going to put down like, I don't know, 6 to 8 inches thick leaves over the top of it. And my guess is that you're probably going to have a bucket of leaves inside the house that you're going to mix into your compost as you go, you know, in case it starts to be a little off or something, and it's a short-term solution. Well, I mean, we have two buckets. We have two buckets that are about 5 gallons. They're stainless steel buckets. And one is the compost and one is the sawdust. But we have a sawmill, so we just gather sawdust from our sawmill.
Yeah.
And then but you'll have leaves instead. And so whenever what's in the compost bucket starts getting a little whiff of anything, we just throw a whole bunch of sawdust on it. And then once it's full, then we take it on outside and then, splort, it goes in one spot and then we throw a whole bunch of sawdust on that. And so, but you'll just use leaves instead of sawdust because that's what you have tons of.
Okay. That sounds way easier. Okay.
So I imagine that someday you're going to do chickens.
Yeah, probably.
And if you got coyotes. I don't think your wavy deer fence is going to work for that.
No, they'll need a much more protection. We have fox and coyotes that would get them. And then we also have like hawks.
So, I mean, this would be a good time to kind of talk about this one. And that is that, it might be wise to, cause when you do chickens, I want you to have at least 4 paddocks. And, I want each paddock to have a bunch of hugel cultures in it growing a lot of food.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and each paddock needs to be coyote proof. So you're going to have to think of some kind of fence that you're going to build for each of these paddocks that will keep your chickens safe and keep the coyotes out.
Oh, gosh.
Exactly. Exactly. So then of course, you know, you'll have – so it's kind of like you'll probably end up with 2 paddocks – on the northwest side and 2 paddocks on the southeast side. And then, you'll move your chickens around these paddocks and then you'll give your kitchen scraps those chickens. But, that's what I want you to do.
Okay.
And that very well could be completely different from what you actually do.
No, but it's good. It gives me different ideas than what I'm coming up with too.
I mean, I can kind of see 2 natural paddocks up on the northwest side already, yeah. You know, on one side of the driveway and the other side of the driveway. I'm not, you know, I'm less certain about what you might do on the southeast side.
And, okay, I can see that. I didn't even know we had as much land up front on the west side of the driveway. I can't
remember. Yeah.
I think the neighbor has her gardens there. Huh. I wonder how old this photo is. I've got another question, and I don't know if I can slide it in here on a site eval, but it's for the inside of the house. I had put up a picture of where there was a cooking wood stove previously, and the sellers did take it with them. And I'm trying to figure out what. I don't think I have enough space there for Rocket Math Heater. You know, I grew up with a wood stove. There's a fireplace in the living room on the other side of that. But this is kind of already set up for something.
Okay. All right. So there was a wood cook stove there before.
Correct.
Okay. And you don't want a cook stove.
Well,
this must be. Okay. All right.
I cook enough.
Well, we have rocket cook stoves here at my place. We have three of them.
Do they grow two though, or is it just not? It's not the mass that holds onto it there.
Right.
And then gone.
But you know, that's true. That's true. Okay. You want heat is what I hear you saying.
And maybe. Yeah.
All right.
That would be a priority over cooking, but these are plenty of both.
So, there's, it looks like there's a doorway to the left there, right?
There's yeah.
Kind of a
opening. It's like an opening.
And then to the right is the kitchen.
To the right is like the far side of the kitchen, some storage.
Okay.
I'm standing in the kitchen taking the photo.
So whatever gets built right here, kind of needs to fit on the footprint you can kind of see there.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't give us a lot of real estate for a mass.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it is possible to do. Now, another thing is that there's building codes and insurance and stuff like that. And some insurance companies think rocket mass heaters are awesome. And some building codes think that rocket mass heaters are masonry stoves. So it's like you can build pretty much anywhere, but it's kind of like, let's pretend for a moment that we're going to put in an appliance. And so there's this whole concept of, because like if you were to get an air conditioner that goes into a window, you don't need to notify your insurance company, and you also don't need to go and get a permit.
Mm-hmm.
If you were going to plug in another refrigerator that inside of some other room, you've decided this bedroom is no longer a bedroom. It's a pantry and you stick a refrigerator in there. That's cool. Now, of course, these two devices I just mentioned are UL listed. Mm-hmm. So, all right, moving on. If you were to have, let's say you built a rocket mass heater in such a way that it was a shippable core. It was, and the whole thing fit inside of a wood box and it was a pebble style. And, let's say that the day came that you've decided that you're going to move away.
Mm-hmm.
That you could take this whole thing in 45 minutes and pack it up onto a pickup truck. The rocket mass heater. Then one could argue it's more of an appliance than a modification to the structure because you've already got a hole in the wall for the exhaust.
Right. That's my plug.
Yeah. And so.
That's not electric.
Pardon?
Yeah. I said not UL rated, but it's not electric.
Yeah. So, but the thing is that we could put something in here And but the thing is that what I'm getting at is Pebble style is really awesome because it can be packed up and loaded onto a truck in 45 minutes. And so, and it looks like Molly left us. So, I think Molly's having some internet trouble. Okay. I'll just go ahead and keep talking and she could look at the video later on the YouTubes or something. All right. I think Pebble style is the way to go here because, you could load it up on trucks so fast. It makes it more of a, all right, you're back. Molly, you missed a couple minutes. No big deal.
I could see you.
Okay. So, in which case it's kind of like, okay, a rocket mass heater, it would have to have probably a relatively tall mass.
Yeah.
In order to do its magic. And fit in that space. So it can be done. And then of course, you know, the exhaust goes right out, that port right there. A rocket cooktop. I have not tried to do a pebble style design in any way, shape or form, anything that could be moved quickly. So you kind of see when we talked earlier about cooktop or mass heater, and I'm kind of leaning towards the mass heater because we can do pebble style, and the pebble style is going to be something where it just seems like pebble style is for renters. You start talking about Cobb and it's like you really probably have to own it, or like the owner is the one that's doing the build more than the renter, you know. It's more of a permanent thing. Getting it out of there is an enormous project. And so otherwise, I would say a cooktop would be a lovely and delightful thing to do right there because it's so close to the kitchen and there's so little footprint we have to work with. And you could even try to do something that's a little bit of both, a little bit of a cooktop with a butt warmer right there. But really, I think that the thing to shoot for in this with these limitations would be a weirdly shaped rocket mass heater. Now you got a fireplace on the other side, which is they're terrible for heating anything.
Yeah.
That's kind of their design. They're not supposed to heat your home. They're supposed to cook your food or be just, you know, a place to stare at a fire.
Yeah.
All right. Did I answer your question or did I just make things more complicated? Yeah, that one right there.
Let me know. It might be possible to do a mass heater there.
It would just be weird. It would just be shaped weird. So, all right. I mean, you know, it's so bizarre. We have rocket mass heaters all over the place here. I had a fire here this morning and I just was doing a little recollection of like how I used to live in a place that's very much like the place I live in now and how I burned so much more wood and I had to keep the fire going almost all day to keep the temperatures inside reasonable.
Yeah, I think they sound great as someone who did grow up with a wood stove and now I don't have either.
The whole thing of like going outside and chopping a bit of wood, like yesterday I chopped a bit of wood and I spent, I don't know, I went outside on three different times and each time was probably 7 minutes. And now we have enough firewood to last us 2 weeks.
That's crazy.
And I brought in like, I don't know, four of those wood carriers full.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, the amount of wood is so little. So it's like you get all of the biophilic that we want from handling the wood. I mean, I read something recently. It said it was some sort of poll asking women, what are the things that you find most attractive in a guy? Like, what's a green flag when you're dating a guy or you're about to date a guy? And number one was a garden. Huh. And number two was he takes care of his houseplants. He has houseplants and he takes good care of them. And number three was he heats with wood. And so and it's like, you know, the whole chopping of the wood and I don't know, going out and getting the wood to bring it to where it can be chopped, and then of course bringing it in and starting a fire, all of those steps. And so I think okay, I mean, not that you're a fella looking for a gal, but if nothing else, it exposes how much we enjoy not only the fire itself and the sensation of being around it, but the act of bringing in the firewood. Like when we've brought in a bunch of firewood and stacked it outside, there is a biophilic sense of accomplishment there. You know, you are a provider. You have checked off that box. And then when you go out and you knock it into some smaller pieces and bring it inside and restack it inside, I don't know. That's a similar sort of act on a much smaller scale. Gets you outside for a little bit. A little bit of physical activity. Then of course the act of actually burning it is also biophilic. I'm just saying that there's a direct immediate reward for those that do it, and apparently observers appreciate it as well.
Yeah, my kids would be in on starting fires. They do love that.
We have these kindling crackers outside, and the youngsters love to grab the wood and run it through the kindling crackers. I don't suppose anybody can see this. Like, this is probably too zeroed in, but I've got some pretty powerful wounds on my finger from when I was 11 chopping kindling.
No.
And so these kindling crackers are great. I don't know if Tina can get us a picture of one up, but basically it's a blade that's mounted on a little rack, so that if you were to fall over, you can't land on the blade. But then you put the block of wood inside the rack, and so it's sitting on top of the blade. Then you hit it with a hammer, and so that way you have no way of hurting your finger like I did when I was 11. The thing is that we've had a lot of 9, 10, and 11-year-olds who just go out there for an hour and a half a day, every day, and do that. And then everything everywhere is fully stocked with wood that's been broken up because they just groove on it. And then, of course, their parents fawn all over them to say, oh, you did so great. You're helping the community. You're doing all these. Yes, I know. I'm amazing and awesome. I got all this wood in. So I don't know. There's that, that kind of thing, that kind of benefit for kids. I know that when I was 11 and on the ranch, when I was living with my granddad on that ranch, there were some springs, and there was this one spring that I would go to. Oh, there's the kindling cracker. That's what it looks like. You can buy. We have some here that we made.
Okay, but, I get it now.
Yeah. So we had these springs, and there were brook trout in these little tiny dribbly creek things. And I would go out there and catch three or four trout and bring them home before breakfast. And then my granddad would make such a big deal about how I'm the founder of the feast and I am the provider for the family. It's just me and him, but he would say provider of the family. He would go on and on and on about it. And then when he'd eat it, it'd be like, this is so, this has to be the best trout I think I've ever had. And I'm thinking like, that's a lot of bones, man. That is, I got to do this less because of the bones, but him going on about, you know, me being the founder of the feast and everything is pretty cool.
Yeah. It's shellfish around here.
Oh, of course. Okay. Of course.
So then what can I do with the shells?
I think that if you've got tons and tons of them, let's say you have a 10 gallon bucket. You don't have a 10 gallon bucket, but I'm going to pretend for a moment. You got it. Because they're kind of light, right? But let's say you have a 10 gallon bucket full of shells of different kinds of things. Then when you go to build your hugel culture, that's a blotch.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah. This is a whole bunch of shells in this one blotch. And so, and the next blotch over, a bunch of kitchen scraps. And the next blotch over is a bunch of twigs. And the next blotch over is going to be a lot of chop and drop stuff. And okay. The next blotch. So yeah, I would say a bunch of shells would be a great blotch. And then as the years pass, you're going to probably find out that potatoes like that spot more than some of the other spots. And you'll learn over time, you know, you plant your potatoes everywhere and then you'll find out potatoes like this spot.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not like that spot. And so, stuff like that. So you want diversity on the inside of your hugel culture is what I'm saying.
Makes sense.
All right, Molly. One more question. What do you got for me?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I think I've pretty much exhausted them.
Oh, good. Because
I've got a really easy question. I know you're probably going to say no because it involves more work. But if I'm getting – never mind. I know what you're going to say.
Well, there might be people watching this that don't know what the question is or what I'm going to say. So you can ask the question.
Okay, I'm going to ask it. This will be the making fun part of it. But like, so from my neighbor or a friend who has chickens already, if I wanted to take some, but this is doing compost my old way, not the way that you would have. If I wanted to get some of the manure for that, questions that I should ask, like, would be about organic feed.
Yeah.
You're just going to say, don't bother with it.
Well, is it organic? Do you know?
Right.
Yeah. And it's like,
what to put in for shavings?
Well, all right. So the most popular place to use persistent herbicides is going to be with grain crops, grasses and grain crops, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the most popular place. The number one feed for chickens that they buy and they give to chickens is grains that were designated as not fit for human consumption. And it's like, okay, so fucked up grain. So what made it fucked up? And it's like, could have something to do with whatever herbicide package they're using. So, but even if it did great, if the grains did great, there's still a good chance that they use persistent herbicides.
Yeah.
Unless it's organic. And even the organic stuff, I've kind of got some, I'm going to give it the stink eye, but you're right. Now, rather than importing anything, I would like to suggest that you grow your own. Now, that would be a great use of that old garden is to grow a whole bunch of stuff that just pumps out enormous amounts of organic matter, which is going to act as mulches or as innards for new hugel culture beds.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, you could bring in organic matter like chicken manures. Yeah, you could do that, but it's like there's so many questions and oftentimes the answers have so many lies. And so it's kind of like, boy, I think that the smartest thing to do is to grow your own fertilizer. Helen Attal likes to say that you should always have a ghost acre. And on your ghost acre, you're going to grow the things that you're going to use as fertilizers and mulches for your active acre.
Okay.
All right.
That's the new name of the property, Ghost Acres.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Molly, I got to be done because my bladder says that this is the end of our time together.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Stay on the line because Tina's got to, you know, gather the recordings and stuff. But okay. Tina, I think we're all done. If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com where we talk about hugel culture, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.
In a world on the brink of social collapse, one website stands above the rest to fight back the zombie horde of corporate trolls. Permies.com. Take back control of your destiny and protect your loved ones from the toxic gick coming at you from all directions. Strap on your overalls and start building that bunker of abundance with the good vibes and friendly, helpful insight found at Permies.com.